In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Have you eaten any more of your Cosmic Crisp apples?
I have. Well, I told you about this recipe that I came up with, which was kind of a goofy recipe, but it's mostly apples. It just has a little bit of, I don't know, batter to hold it all together. It was so fantastic with the Cosmic Crisp apple because they kept their texture and they were so juicy and appley.
Well, if folks that didn't catch the show last week, we talked with Bruce Barrett, who spent 20 years of his life developing the Cosmic Crisp apple, the first apple ever developed in Washington State at Washington State University. And we had a wonderful conversation with Bruce last week as that apple was released in December of 2019, the first apple ever developed wholly in Washington. I didn't realize that most apples came from other states, other countries, New Zealand,
China. Which is mind-boggling. You would think with all the apples they grow that they wouldn't have developed their own.
But, so we tasted it live on the air last Saturday, and it's available in a lot of supermarkets now. Yeah,
it's widely available. They did a great job of ramping up and getting it out there. They did. It's a little more expensive than other apples.
Now it is because it's just been introduced and they have to recoup all the investment over 20 years of planting it out, and it takes several years to get fruit. So it was a fun show last week. So we're going to test it, remember it, four-month intervals because he said it's good for 10 months.
Yeah.
To 12
refrigerated.
Months. Though. Refrigerated.
And that was an important thing for people to know. Refrigerate your apples. Don't leave them out on the counter. I went, this is apropos nothing, but I saw our friend Tom Simino recently at his house, and he was talking about, oh, well, I left this, I don't know, it was a Fuji or something. He said, out on the counter for a couple of days, and he said, you know, it wasn't very good. And I said, let me tell you, refrigerate your apples. Don't leave them out.
With those words of wisdom, we say hello to Sarah Owens, who is our guest this morning in the KSRO kitchen. Nice to meet you.
Good morning.
We've had an email relationship for the past 4 or 5 months, but now that you're a resident of Sonoma County, I understand.
It's true.
Congratulations for your moving from the East Coast
slowly
across America.
You escaped Brooklyn.
They let me loose.
Well, it's great. It's nice to have you as a resident of Sonoma County.
Yeah.
And you're going to be giving a couple classes at Miracle Plum down on Davis Street in Santa Rosa over the next couple months. We'll talk about that. And now, you don't have a Brooklyn accent.
Well, I grew up in East Tennessee.
But you don't have any Tennessee accent either.
Well, give me a couple of shots of whiskey.
Does that sound familiar?
Moonshine, yeah.
Who says that?
Do you know who another person like that is? Steve Garner who has a very urbane thing, but he's from Kentucky.
And, no kidding.
And a couple
Where
of shots.
Kentucky?
Louisville.
I lived in Louisville for 8 years.
I know. I learned that by reading your book.
Okay.
And you went to Bellarmine.
I did.
Now, when I grew up in Louisville, it was a college, but now it's a university.
Right. Yeah.
So you grew up in Tennessee. What part of Tennessee?
East Tennessee, near the Great Smoky Mountains. We say I grew up in the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains.
And were you a farm girl? Was your family part? Did you raise vegetables and crops?
Yeah. So I grew up on a pretty large farm, about 135 to 40 acres. And the boundaries were kind of unclear because all of our neighbors had large farms as well. And we always had a garden. We had various animals. My parents' generation, they kept more of the, livestock. But by the time I came around, it was really more, we took care of about a 1 acre garden. And, my parents would just kind of set me loose. And when I heard the car horn honk, I knew that was time to come home. So I had those 140 acres to just roam wild and have fun.
Were grandparents important in moving you into an appreciation of the natural world and foraging?
Absolutely, yeah. Both of my grandmothers were alive when I was a young girl. And my father's mother was very well known in the valley. We lived in Dutch Valley, which is in between Pine Ridge and Walden's Ridge, and she was very well known in the valley for being a very good country cook. So that meant a lot of lard, a lot of freshly grown vegetables, the things that we didn't particularly produce ourselves. A lot of meat we would trade. Our neighbors had hogs, So I grew up eating not very sophisticated food, but really delicious, very fresh food. Now, that's not to say my grandmothers didn't embrace highly processed convenience foods when they came around.
Like what?
Campbell's cream of mushroom soup.
Yeah.
Cool Whip, they thought was the coolest thing ever. You know, things that made their lives a little bit easier.
Did your grandmother forage?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Poke salad was probably still one of my favorite things. Poke is it's an indigenous weed to the Great Smoky Mountain area, and in the spring when it sprouts and it's anywhere below about a foot tall, you can pick it. You have to blanch it or parboil it in order to remove some of the natural toxins, but once you do that, you wring it dry, and then you pan fry it with preferably some bacon grease, and then some scrambled eggs, and maybe some spring onions, and oh my gosh, that's one of the best meals ever.
Do you know what's fascinating? The whole thing that you did, that you grew up with, of foraging, of knowing what was out there that you could go gather for free. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that it kind of disappeared, except in places like that. But it's come back in a big way now. And so all these people are foraging in the city and all of that, which I love.
Yeah. Well, growing up, I thought that was, you know, everybody did that. I knew no difference. There were particular things that we were very keen on, and poke was one, which, you know, a lot of things you forage, they're very seasonal. So they're very precious when they come and you harvest and you enjoy. But I thought everybody did that, and it really wasn't until I went to college that I realized, you know, not everybody goes to their backyard and picks dandelion greens. And
did you have scuppernong grapes growing up?
We did. We called them muscadines, and unfortunately, there was a huge deep freeze in the late 80s, and so for a long time in the 90s, we couldn't find them because they had to basically grow back from seed in our particular area of the woods. But I remember being a little girl and going out in late September, early October with my father, and we could sniff them out. Because you can, when they fall, you can almost smell the they kind of start to ferment a little bit if they've been on the ground.
I know that smell.
So I have to ask you, did you ever gather, were pawpaws part of that? Part of that?
Yeah.
Your area?
So I remember pawpaws. I don't necessarily remember eating them, but I remember these legends of the pawpaw. And then later in life, when I worked at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, because of climate change, basically, the garden was able to plant pawpaws. And that's really, that was kind of a big thing because the New York area was supposed to really be the northern reaches of, you know, the pawpaw tree. So recently I went home on my trip from New York to California, and I go hiking and I stumble across this huge swath of pawpaw trees because they grow in groves. You know, where there's one, there's usually quite a few. And almost squashed, stepped on a whole bunch of ripe pawpaws. And so I take a bunch home, and I say, Mom, I found pawpaws. And she said, well, I've never had one.
Wow.
And I'm like, really? I remember us talking about it, and I remember, you know, all these legends in the song about the pawpaw. But she said, well, I'm so curious. And so that, you know, it's funny how memory can play tricks
on you.
She very cautiously tried one. And she liked it. I mean, if you've never had a pawpaw, they have a very particular texture. I call it, you know, something close to a custard texture. And their flavor, I've never had the same pawpaw twice. The flavor can really vary from something like a tropical, you know, kind of tart mango to more of a banana. And these particular ones were very good. I actually saved.
I don't remember a pawpaw recipe in either any of your books.
Well, you know, the thing about my publisher and my recipes is I love hyper local specific ingredients, but you know, that doesn't always sell books. So
well said.
Because where are you going to buy them?
Recipe. And pawpaws don't typically travel very
And
well,
so Clinton, Tennessee, where you grew up, is that near Knoxville?
It's it's about 35 to 40 minutes from Knoxville.
I know Knoxville because of White Lily Flower. The flower of the South.
So we have three. You're the most prolific author I've ever seen. Three of your books in front of us here, and we're gonna talk a bit about all of them, but especially about your James Beard award-winning book called Sourdough, which is. It's the most complete discussion of sourdough, its history, how to make it, how to keep it, do all of the stuff that I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, wow.
So congratulations.
Okay.
It's pretty great. But one of the things that I thought was interesting about it was how you came to sourdough, that it was for health reasons.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, talk about the health challenges you faced and who or what led you to sourdough.
Right. So at the time that I started baking with sourdough, I was working a full-time job as a professional horticulturist at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And I had been hired out, actually I had not even graduated yet from my professional training as a rosarian to take over this very historic collection of roses at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And so I had probably put a little more stress on myself than I needed to because this was my first job and I was very excited. And unfortunately, there was a very major disease that had taken over the collection. And so I had probably put myself under more pressure and stress than I needed to, which, as we all know, stress exacerbates anything, any medical condition you have. And I had always had digestive distress going through periods in my life. And so basically I became very, very sick, and to a point that it was interrupting my basic daily activities from work to being social, and was having a very hard time keeping food in my system. That's a very polite way of putting it. And went through a series of visits to different doctors for tests, you know, making sure to rule things out. And was sent to, you know, basically one doctor sent me to another, and four doctors later, the gastroenterologist there I was seeing said, well, we think that the best treatment for you is to take steroids. And I had a friend about a year before who had been diagnosed with Crohn's and had been put on steroids. And so I called him up and I said, hey, you know, what's your experience been? And he said, absolutely, don't do it. Just find another way. There's alternative methods. And so at the time, you know, I was kind of going through these flare-ups. And I was feeling okay at that point. And I said, you know what, let me take a step back and try to really understand my body as a, you know, its microbiome and how, you know, obviously I'm out of balance. How can I naturally get myself back into balance? And so I started looking at different ways to introduce probiotics into my diet and also try and understand prebiotics and the relationship within my gut, and also that relationship between the gut health and the immune system. And so I started basic fermentation of vegetables, so like sauerkraut, kimchi, very, very basic sort of steps. And one day I wander into a used bookstore and I pick up this tiny little book written in the late 70s titled Adventures in Sourdough. And the first chapter is how to take your sourdough starter camping. And so I flipped through, and it was like a 50-cent coffee, and I'm like, I'm going to take this home. And at that time, I had done an elimination diet to see what foods were most disruptive to my system, and realized that grains, mostly whole grains, not in particularly wheat, but quinoa was my worst enemy. So I realized that whole grains were kind of what was giving me the most problem, and that sourdough was actually a way to ferment grains. And as most of us know now, fermentation makes foods more digestible, mm-hmm. but also the nutritional availability is much greater. So I said, okay, I'm going to take this little book home, I'm going to create a starter, and I'm going to ferment my grains before I eat them. And that sent me down the rabbit hole of sourdough fermentation.
How long ago was that?
That was, we're in the year 2020. That was about 10 years ago.
Okay. So everything changed.
Everything
over
changed.
Over a period of time.
I also took great steps toward living a different kind of lifestyle, lowering my stress, getting better sleep. I had been eating a lot of health foods that I thought.
Now she held up her hands with quotation marks.
Quotation, yeah. These, you know, very processed ingredients and products that I thought were healthy. You know, the packaging told me uh-huh. they were healthy, but I didn't really understand a lot about how to keep a healthy gut. And so I eliminated a lot of processed foods. So there were a lot of different things at play, and sourdough was a huge step toward healing my gut in order to start reintroducing not just grains, but other foods that were also giving me some issues.
And sourdough is not anything new.
No.
It's been around for 150 years. It's what the 49ers did back in 1850 to make everything was started uh-huh. with a starter,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of like, oh, we're discovering this new mm-hmm. way of baking breads mm-hmm. and fermenting foods.
Mm-hmm.
Just rediscovering a lot of things in the past. Why
don't
we take a break
years.
And we'll jump into sourdough when we get back. We'll touch on Toast and Jam, which was your second book, just briefly, and then we'll move into your newest book, Heirloom, all written by Sarah Owens, author of Sourdough. And we must talk about your photographer of these books when we come back.
Yeah.
Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRDO kitchen celebrating beginning our 34th year on the radio.
Windsor hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 103.5. KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it. Join the switch to Crystal Clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
DJ Sash and Glass is a full-service windows and glass family business that has served Sonoma County since 1960. DJ's makes it easy to replace your old, drafty, hard-to-open windows. Improve the look and value of your home with reliable, energy-efficient Milgard replacement windows. You don't have to worry about disposing of your old windows. DJ Sash and Glass makes it easy to get your home improvement project done. And shower doors and enclosures are just a phone call away at DJ Sash and Glass. DJ specializes in custom shower doors and custom mirrors for your new or replacement bathroom project. Call DJ Sash and Glass today for windows and your shower door replacement. Add a touch of class to your glass with DJ Sash and Glass. 2985 Wilgin Court, call 546-7344 and online at djsglass.com.
Hey, Sonoma County, this is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. This is a great time for many homeowners to refinance and use your home's equity to pay off credit cards, complete home improvement projects, or just lower your payment with a new fixed-rate mortgage. Just visit georgeadair.com for a fast pre-approval. Then I'll provide a free phone or in-person consultation, reviewing your goals and potential savings. Cross Country offers amazing technology, incredible rates, and a local presence you can trust. Even more important, I have the experience and loan programs to help get your loan approved even with challenging credit or income situations. We're a direct lender, and many of our clients close their refinance loan in as fast as 21 days. Some properties don't even require an appraisal. If you're ready for a great lending experience, then let's get started. Call me direct at 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgiadair.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and Georgia Dare, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
Hey, Sonoma County. Thank you for making Creams Towing the number one rated heavy-duty towing company in Sonoma County. Creams Heavy Duty Towing has the largest fleet of medium and heavy-duty rigs in Sonoma County, and have been around since the 70s. So they're doing something right. Creams Heavy Duty Towing is on the road 24/7. Got a big rig stuck or need a four-wheel drive tow truck? Creams has the knowledge and experience to tow any and all large trucks. Their goal is to get you back on the road and home safe in the shortest amount of time. Need an RV towed? You guessed it. Creams Heavy Duty Towing can do that too. Their Class A drivers are fully insured and certified in heavy-duty towing. Don't scream. Call Creams, 707-588-1250. Creams Heavy Duty Towing, 588-1250.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
King tides in effect through Sunday. Today, a mix of clouds and sun at 55, 54 along the coast. Clear skies tonight, low 35, 42 on the shores. For Sunday, a bit cloudy with afternoon showers high of 53, 52 in Bodega Bay. Evening showers also for Monday at 52 degrees. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
In the KSRO kitchen, Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash, and special guest today is Sarah Owens, recently has relocated to Sonoma County, so we'll be seeing and talking to her quite a lot over the coming years. Her book, Heirloom, is new. We'll get to that one in just a few minutes. We're talking about Sourdough, which was her first book. That was the recipes for rustic fermented breads and sweets and savories and more, and it won the prestigious James Beard Award in 2016. Were you as surprised as you look?
I was so surprised. I remember, you know, getting the call that it had been nominated, and I think I just, you know, fell to the ground. Like, I literally had to drop my knees and just sit on the ground for a minute. And then I thought, well, there's no way I'm going to win, because all of the other nominees had written other books and had been, you know, in the industry for such a long time. And I asked a friend to go with me as my date that night, who I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to win, so we're just going to go and have a good time. And then I won, and I was like, I remember taking like 2 or 3 minutes to walk up to the stage, because I was like, oh, I need to figure out something to say. but it was a huge honor, and it really gave me the confidence to move on also and continue to work in the field of food, which was not really my intention at all.
So I love, we were talking off the air, your description of you started baking bread for you, and then baked a lot of it, and so baked it for friends and all stuff in your little tiny kitchen in New York.
Yeah.
And your description of the summertime, it was just unbearably hot, and the wintertime it was cold. And
that phrase labor of love definitely comes
to mind. And the part of it that I loved is that you didn't have a stand mixer.
No.
And you make the point in the book about the importance of learning to mix the dough by hand.
Yes.
So that you can touch it, I guess.
Yeah. And when I teach, I do a lot of instructing. I make sure that everyone not only feels it, but feels the difference, you know, because as the fermentation goes on and progresses, you really can feel the difference in how the dough changes, which is very, very important.
And that's and that was an admonition that you gave to anybody who's starting down the bread baking thing, is don't use a mixer, do it by hand, learn what that feels like and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Can I ask you another question, which I did ask you too, the phytates and what those are, and that sourdough fermentation mitigates them, or explain that.
So phytates, sometimes you'll hear it referred to as phytic acid. They are a naturally occurring compound in all seeds, so grains, legumes, nuts, and people with diets that are very high in plant-based foods, or people that have immune dysfunctions can have issues with processing phytates. And basically what happens is when you ingest foods that are high in phytic acid, they basically not only are difficult to digest, but they bind with the vitamins and minerals that are in the foods themselves. So your gut lining is not able to absorb those nutrients. So a lot of people that have digestion issues dealing with things like legumes and nuts and grains, they'll also be anemic. And this was my issue for decades. For the first 30 something years of my life, I was always tested anemic, and you know, I ate plenty of red meat. You know, so it was a digestion, it was a gut lining issue. And so what sourdough does, sourdough is a culture of two different types of microbes, bacteria and different types of yeasts. And the bacteria are what are responsible for helping break down the phytic acid content, as well as it helps break down the gluten. A lot of people think that they have issues with bread because of gluten, and that may very well be true, particularly if you have celiac disease, which you shouldn't really be touching or eating bread, period. But people who are sort of gluten intolerant, sourdough, that bacterial action of sourdough can also help break down the gluten to the point that it becomes much more digestible. So the bacterial action of sourdough, it's kind of a two-part beneficial thing. It's, you know, not just the gluten, but also these phytates that can present an issue as well.
Well, what the judges saw in this sourdough book, because both John and I have been privileged to be judges at the James Beard Cookbook Awards for many, many years. And immediately I was taken with not only the format of the book, but you kind of have a take-no-prisoners approach to sourdough. You really move it forward into other areas of baking, which I really have not remembered seeing in other baking books. You have a fascinating, there's no ingredient that you're afraid of or you don't think might go into a loaf of bread, which is great. The illustrations and the technique was very clearly explained in the first part of the book. And then the second part is devoted to the recipes, which are just marvelous.
Which aren't just bread, too, which was great. So that this sourdough technique, I thought the whole idea of sourdough pasta, for want of a better thing, to make your pasta that way is fascinating to me.
You know, again, it's sourdough can be used as an aid for digestion. It can be used for flavor. It can also be used just as an ingredient. And if you have kept a sourdough starter, you understand that it multiplies very quickly.
Did you bring yours from Brooklyn?
I did. I brought it in the form of a desm culture. So desm is it's a very old technique of keeping a very dry, stiff starter. And when you do so, it slows down the fermentation dramatically. This is also how I travel. I teach workshops all over the world, and when I take it with me to teach those workshops, this is also how I take it with me on airplanes and boats and trains.
No problems
taxis.
Getting it through immigration customs. No,
no, because you basically make it into a very, very stiff. It's not liquid anymore.
Oh.
Make it into a very, very stiff ball, and then you bury that in like a small sack of flour. And so, if I'm not checking a bag, I'll put it in my carry-on. And sometimes the TSA will want to swab it for explosives because of the flour. But most of the time, I'm checking a bag, and I just put it in my checked bag. And I've traveled everywhere.
Wow, how to take your starter with you. I've never heard that
so
discussion.
Can I ask you one other quick question? And because I guess we need to get on to the new book, too. But was your discussion of the similarity of compost and sourdough? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So when I first started fermenting in general, it was pretty exciting because I was working as a gardener using organic methods. And when you're taking care of an organic garden, you're really trying to basically take care of the soil, not just the plants, and the microbial sort of profile of the soil. You're trying to diversify and increase the soil health through its microbial diversity. And so those same concepts can basically be applied to a culture, whether that culture is sauerkraut or sourdough or kefir or any number of different fermented foods, because you're trying to encourage and farm microbes. So it was a very sort of easy concept for me to embrace as a gardener.
Before we move on from sourdough, one of your most requested recipes in the sourdough book was the butternut squash and cherry bread.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going, that sounded beautiful. The candied bacon bread sounded wild,
yeah.
Too. There's all these beautiful recipes. A roasted chestnut bread. Mm-hmm. There's a beet bread.
Well, the part that I love that you did was you did for each of the seasons. So it was broken down by season.
Mm-hmm.
But in there, then you would have a section on breads, a section on savory recipes,
yeah.
And a section on sweets, which
right.
made it really fun to work your way through it.
And how in the world did you hook up with Martha Stewart?
I actually was on her show for roses first.
Oh, I see.
So I was in, it was my first, like, I think 3 months of working at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden as a rosarian. And I, you know, got an email from our marketing person, and she said, oh, you're going to be on Martha Stewart next week pruning roses. And I said, oh, great. So that's really how.
So did you like her?
I did. Yeah. And I had met her once before at the New York Botanical Garden because they had these auctions every year. And we met over witch hazel. And she was interested in three different witch hazels. And I was trying to coach her on which one to purchase. And I said, well, this one, you know, it's a late bloomer. And she said, oh, that's great. I am too.
With that, we'll take a break. Sarah Owens is joining Chef John Ash and me in the KSRO kitchen this morning. Her new book is Heirloom. She's the author of Sourdough and Toast and Jam. And we'll talk about this book when we return. Sarah is now a proud resident of Sonoma County, so you'll be hearing a lot more about her. And she's teaching a series of classes at Miracle Plum in Santa Rosa on Davis Street. And we'll tell you about those classes right after this.
Traffic on the fives. Weather six times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
Agricultural community farmers markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week, year-round.
Saturday mornings, 8:30 to 1, continue the tradition at the Santa Rosa Community Farmers Market at the Veterans Building across from the fairgrounds. New for 2020, the Wednesday market is moving to Farmers Lane Plaza in Santa Rosa, starting January 8th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Chicken, lamb, beef, and fresh fish all available, including Bud's Meats, Green Star Farms, Silver Sky Ranch, Bethesda Springs, and Santa Rosa Seafood. Seasonal produce like pomegranates, persimmons, Santa Maria's strawberries, winter squash, greens, eggs, cheese, and green beans. Get baked goods from Revolution Bread, Redbird Bakery, Nikki's Flower Creations. Relax and eat bread and bake shift. fresh coffee from Bella Rosa Coffee Roasters. Grab breakfast, lunch, or dinner from the restaurant quality food vendors like Nelly's Oysters, What a Chicken, and Van Doe Waffles.
For more info on your local farmers markets, look them up on Facebook.
That's a great question. I get that all the time. I'm so glad you asked.
Dr. Walter Tom loves questions.
Yes, varicose veins can be painful. I have them and so does my mom, so I get it. The cool thing is that treatments are no longer painful.
In fact, Dr. Tom thinks you should ask as many questions as you like before any procedure.
I understand your concerns. That's why I do all my surgeries under local anesthesia. It's the safest way to have a procedure.
Dr. Tom is never in a rush and thinks every question is a good question.
You're really not asleep for the surgery. Local means that I can communicate during the procedure and we can make sure that you get what you really want. You're going to have less pain and a quicker recovery.
Dr. Walter Tom was voted the best cosmetic surgeon in the North Bay. Find out why. Make an appointment today for a free consultation. Call Dr. Walter Tom at 542-8346 or go online to drwaltertom.com. Your questions matter to Dr. Tom.
Join George Adair of Cross Country Mortgage every Wednesday from noon to 12:30 for On Air with George Adair on KSRO. George helps you understand real estate and lending. Whether you're looking to purchase your first home or expanding your real estate holdings, George will help you navigate the world of home loans. George talks with community guests, covers local topics, and shows you how the larger world economy affects your bottom line each Wednesday from noon to 12:30. On Air with George Adair on KSRO.
Deal yourself a career at Grayton. Enroll in our free blackjack dealer school. Meet Simon, table game supervisor.
I started off as a student in the dealer school, and 5 years later, I'm supervising.
Join the team. Earn $20 per hour or more with tips. Enroll in Blackjack Dealer School today. Space is limited, so sign up at GraytonResortCasino.com.
Does healthy eating habits fit into your New Year's resolution? Then shop the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market for fresh local produce. It's important to know where your food comes from, and you can meet the local farmers and ranchers who raise quality, locally grown food products for you to enjoy. At the market, you can savor a variety of delicious prepared foods. The market offers fresh local ingredients for healthy dinners, a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork to seafood, along with seasonal fruits and vegetables. Taste the local goat cheeses from Two Rock Valley Goat Cheese. Sample the wonderful baked goods, jams, spices, and pastas. Everything you need to create memorable healthy dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Open year-round, rain or shine, Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Paradise Pet Resorts welcomes your furry family members to go to paradise for the day. Try doggy daycare. It helps your dog socialize, learn dog etiquette, and get exercise. There's all-day supervised pup play, indoor and outdoor yards, and webcams so you can check on them from anywhere. Nobody loves your pets like you do, but nobody cares for your pets like they do at Paradise Pet Resorts.
It's paradise.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Sarah Owens joining Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO kitchen. We're talking about three of her books. We just got through with Sourdough. The second book was called Toast and Jam. Came out in 2017. Modern Recipes for Rustic Bread, Goods and Sweets and Savory Spreads. A small book, but a lovely, lovely book. You talk about milk bread, buckwheat milk bread, which was a wild concept in there. And some other terrific cakes and ideas. And fermented pickles, Quickles was a cute name, which I never thought about, which was just lovely. And then the new book is Heirloom. If people want to keep track of your worldwide teaching adventures, what's the best way?
Sure. So on my website, which is ritualfinefoods.com, there's an events tab, and that will tell you where all my upcoming events are listed.
So would you spell that? Ritual?
Ritual, R-I-T-U-A-L. finefoods.com.
And you are teaching a sold-out class tomorrow.
Correct.
At Miracle Plum in Santa Rosa on, is it sourdough baking with Sarah Owens? And you're featuring einkorn flour, one of the wonderful ancient grains.
Exactly.
That's sold out, but you have another class coming January 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Cultured butter workshop.
Yeah.
Oh, your face just lit up.
Well, you know, sometimes I joke that the only reason why I bake bread is so I can eat butter.
That's great.
And there is space available for that. People can go
two
to the Miracle Plum. Oh,
think.
Two spots.
One or two spots.
Well, then probably after this show is over, those will be taken. But you could go to the Miracle Plum website now and sign up for that January 19th Sunday class on cultured butter.
And if you've never tasted cultured butter, it will blow your mind,
so
won't
good.
It?
Yeah, it's so good. And then I'm teaching two more workshops, another sourdough hearth loaf, that's in early March, and then also a lacto fermentation. So that's going to be more of a general, like how to make pickles and sauerkraut and different types of fermented drinks.
All at Miracle Plum.
Yes.
Marvelous. Uh-huh. So here we are at Heirloom, time-honored techniques, nourishing traditions, and modern recipes. And what was the direction of this book compared to the other books?
Yeah, so this is more than just baking. You know, toast and jam was a little bit of a bridge, so it included baked goods as the core recipes and then different types of condiments or spreads or preparations to go with those baked goods. Heirloom encompasses a lot of different concepts. One of them is obviously heirloom ingredients. So, you know, hearkening back to different types of heritage or heirloom grains.
So can I ask, what constitutes heirloom? I know it's a big subject, but what is that when somebody says heirloom?
I think it can mean a lot of different things depending on the context. I think for most people, when we say heirloom, they think heirloom tomato, which, you know, obviously it's an heirloom tomato. It tastes like a real tomato. It's juicy. Sometimes it has these beautiful colors. But botanically speaking, heirloom foods, they come true to seed. They've been passed down for generations. They have a particular set of characteristics that may make them a little bit more difficult to be a commercial product. You know, sometimes we think about heirloom as something that people have, you know, a grandmother has passed along a piece of jewelry or a piece of furniture. And I like to just say, in general, it's an identity preserved thing, whether that's an ingredient, a piece of jewelry, a technique, or, you know, a sort of a recipe that has been passed down over time that stayed true to its original identity. The thing about this particular book is my approach to heirloom ingredients and these different types of concepts of recipes, I'm not always trying to replicate them to their exact identity. So that's one of the biggest differences with this book, because I feel like a technique has to work for me in my kitchen with my ingredients, with my equipment, with my time constraints or liberties. So a lot of these recipes that have been passed to me over time, I've altered them to my taste. So maybe they include less sugar or a less refined type of sugar or more whole grain or, you know, things that are, I'm trying to make them more digestible, more nutritious, but also trying to explain where and how, where they came from and how they evolved.
Well, the first chapter is preserving traditions. And thank you for giving me something else, which I never would have thought of in a million years to do with my Black Mission fig.
Oh.
And that is a fig powder.
Oh, the fig leaf powder.
Fig leaf powder. Uh-huh. Talk about that. How did you discover this? Or?
How did I that's a good question. Right before I started writing this book, or actually maybe when I started thinking about and writing this book, I had traveled to the Middle East. And, you know, a lot of times when ingredients are not always locally available, we really only consume one part of the plant. And for most of us, that's the fruit, the fig. But I think what I realized is that the fig as a plant, all of its parts can be used. Often you'll find in the Middle East, the sap will be used to make a to curdle milk to make a particular type of cheese. The leaves are very aromatic. You can dehydrate them or toast them and then grind them into the into a powder, which has a range of flavors from toasted coconut to vanilla. Really incredible profile of flavors in this one plant.
And how would you use this toasted fig powder?
So in the book in particular, there's a delicious recipe for a melon salad that's kind of like a savory melon salad. And I like to use the fig leaf powder to sift over top. You can also just toast or dehydrate the leaves themselves and then soak them in a custard to make ice cream or whipped cream, which is another easy way to incorporate the flavor. It's a very versatile ingredient.
It's wild. It certainly challenged my preconceptions about what I could do with my fig tree.
Especially with those fig leaves rather than throwing them away.
I would just wrap them and put them on the grill or something
like
that.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's
so great. There was another powder, not that the book is about powders, but there was a second one. Kishik.
I actually had some for breakfast this morning.
Could you spell it and describe it?
So it's a word that comes from it's an Arabic word. So in English, it would be spelled something like K-I-S-H-K. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a grain, wheat usually, that's been combined with yogurt and then allowed to dehydrate or dry, which also ferments the grain. And then it's ground into a powder. And that powder can be reconstituted as this delicious morning porridge that's very hearty. It's very digestible, and it's good winter food. And you can make this I almost compare it to like a little bit more of a sour cream of wheat.
Oh, nice.
So it's on the savory side, and I love to top it with, in the book I have another recipe for lacto-fermented mushrooms that I like to pan fry with some onions or garlic, and then put that on top or serve that with the kishik.
Nice.
It's so delicious.
So another thing that you talked about, which I had never thought about, was whey. And the whey is the leftover of making yogurt or something with that water. And you do all kinds of things with whey.
Yeah, it's another very versatile ingredient, and which would otherwise be a waste product. And in, you know, heirloom kitchens, I associate an heirloom kitchen with a place of frugality and a place of very little waste. And so whey is one of those sort of byproducts of fermentation, of yogurt or kefir, cheese making, that often just sort of gets dumped down the drain. But you can use whey to make a delicious caramel for a caramel upside down cake. In the book, you can use it to, it sounds kind of strange, but you can use it as an acidifier. It's a very acidic ingredient to combine with lime juice to make a wonderful shrimp ceviche.
I saw that. I thought that was the wildest thing.
Good. Oh, it's so good. And it doesn't taste, you know, there's no dairy flavor to it at all. You can use whey as a marinade. Again, because of its acidity, it helps break down the proteins and tenderizes meat.
Nice.
You can use it in to make probiotic smoothies, drinks.
Versatile, isn't it?
Very, very versatile.
Don't throw it down the drain. That was Preserving Traditions, part one of the book, Meat and Animal Products, where the whey section, you call it Yo Whey.
Yeah.
It was very clever. Heirloom grains and flowers.
So you're a proponent of rendered meat fat.
I sure am.
All right. Good for you. Heirloom grains and flowers are next. And then we have the part two, which are the seasonal recipes. And that's where you go through winter and spring and summer.
So would you talk about what you're doing here, what you're going to be doing,
here in Sonoma County, here in West Sonoma County.
I gave her a whole thing about, you're one of
those.
I'm from West Sonoma County.
Yeah, so a little bit of a backstory. So last year I realized in New York, my production facility had maxed out its space. And I was going to need to upgrade into a larger space, invest in more equipment. And I really wasn't sure if I wanted to commit myself to another 20 years in New York. About the same time, this opportunity came up here in Sebastopol to partner with a farm where I had taught them how to make bread using sourdough a few years before. And they were ready to basically create an educational facility in order for people to come and learn how to cook or bake or ferment using farm fresh ingredients from the property. And they said, hey, would you be interested in partnering with us and teaching some fermentation and some baking classes? And we have a little house on the property. It has a yard.
a small dog.
Eventually. Lots of goats, yeah. Cows, pigs, geese.
Wonderful.
An orchard. And this, to me, you know, coming from a very urban location where I had very little growing space, sounded like a dream. And so I said yes. And so it's going to be a little while. We're basically building from the ground up, not just the educational facility, which I can also use for small scale production, larger than what I had in New York, but still keeping it small. But we're also building housing, so people can actually come to the farm, stay on the property, and then take classes in the educational facility.
That'll be exciting to see how this unfurls. A few recipes that I want to mention before we say goodbye. The sourdough challah bread.
Uh-huh.
That sounds very exciting. And also the oxtail borscht with the sour cherries and purple barley. Having just gotten back from Jamaica last week, I ate a lot of oxtail in Jamaica. So I was excited to see that recipe too. And I noticed you have a Shaker lemon pie recipe. And
yeah,
I ate
a lot.
And of course, I visited Shaker Village in Danville near Center College in Kentucky. And it was exciting to see that you gave praise to that Shaker lemon pie.
Well, of course, I have to mix it up because the pie crust is fermented and it's whole grain. And
yes, not just your traditional Shaker pie recipe.
Exactly.
Anything that comes to mind for you, John, before we say goodbye?
Oh, there were all kinds of things. Let's see. One of the simplest was spicy boiled peanuts, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I realized that, you know, boiled peanuts, being in the South, growing up in the South, especially below Tennessee, so Georgia, you know, drive down the road and there's a million places to buy boiled peanuts. And I didn't realize until much later in life that boiled peanuts are especially very common in Asia and India. But they have the added benefit of spices and garlic and can be really, really savory and delicious. And so I started playing around with this upon suggestion of a friend that I have from India, and started boiling them and then started using them to make a hummus. So in the book, there's a sweet potato peanut hummus that is absolutely incredible. It blows everybody's minds, but it's so simple. But I also give you the option for making the hummus if you want to substitute in chickpeas instead of the peanuts. You can do that as well.
And don't forget to make the fire cider tonic with the fire cider Bloody Mary that you have on page 204. I have a star by that one.
Yeah.
So this is a very beautiful book. We're down to the last minute or so.
Okay.
Would you give us your favorite number today, a number that calls to you between 1 and 15?
47.
Wise guy.
Yeah.
How about 11?
Caller number 11 at 636-1350 will win an autographed copy, this one that I'm holding in my hand, of Sarah Owen's new book, Heirloom, Time-Honored Techniques, Nourishing Traditions, and Modern Recipes. Caller number 11. And your photographer, her name is?
Knockman No.
And she is just knockout. She's done
incredible.
All three of your books.
She's an incredible photographer herself. We met through the garden, and she has this appreciation for light, natural light, that's just unparalleled.
Well, thank you for writing this book and your other two books, and thank you for becoming a resident of Sonoma County.
And so keep in touch with us about the progress of this new activity.
Yeah, I sure will. Thank you.
Join Chef John Ashenby in the kitchen next Saturday.
Yeah.
How about it?
Okay, let's
do it. Same time, same station. Thanks, Sarah. It was wonderful meeting you.
Thanks for having me.
This is KSRO Santa Rosa, following the news, Clark Wolf at the table. Close, but no cigar, Steve.